Hello, everyone, and welcome to our second podcast for Big Brother Australia. We are going to be covering the rest of week one of the game here. I'm your host, Taryn Armstrong, and with me today is Pooya. How you doing, Pooya?
I'm doing good, Taryn. It's amazing that we somehow found a way to talk to each other about Big Brother in the midst of everything that's going on. And I'm excited. It's a different Big Brother, but it's kind of like pizza. I'll still take it. It's still good.
it's like pizza. What kind of pizza, though?
Most pizzas. I feel like even if there's a Hawaiian pizza, I'll still grab a slice if that's all that's there kind of thing. So even if BBAU was that caliber, I would take it. But it's been better. It's been better than I would have thought.
Yeah. It's been an interesting first week. I was talking with Rob yesterday about the premiere. He said he was pleasantly surprised that he kind of, you know, was enjoying it. I think so far for me, I'm a little bit let down. So far, I'm hoping we improve now that we're not going to have to introduce new people anymore. Everybody's in. Now maybe we can get to the real meat of it. Because if it goes at the pace it's going right now, I'm not all the way there.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple things that factor into that. Just basically the fact that some of the bigger characters have gone is saddening for me, given that we're going to be in a position where at the end, it's a public vote. Like, there's a lot of things that'll go against it, especially if the pace is going to continue this way. The wheels will fall off real quick, but there's some optimism there for me just because, like you said, now that there's no more new people coming in, there's no more the old, like, us versus them mentality. Hopefully, we're in a position where we just kind of see the game begin to happen and we see the strategy be more welcomed than shunned.
I hope so, because I think there's unfortunately a good chance that we just kind of one by one pagong out all of the eight new people until we're down to the 12 or down to the, you know, whatever, 11 of them again.
Yeah. That'd be brutal. I don't want that. I don't want that at all. I still don't know a lot of these people either. So if it's the thing where it's like out of nowhere, we're just getting a big package about one of the new people that we haven't seen yet. I know they're going. That would be awful. There's a couple of people I'm excited to talk about and excited to see last longer, but a pagonging wouldn't be fun, and just stifling gameplay by getting rid of bigger personalities would also not be fun. So,
yeah, there are some fun things, though. And there are, like, there's reason to watch. I feel like whenever I watch an episode of Big Brother Australia so far, I'm engaged like 2/3 of the time. Because it's about an hour and 20 minutes. Right. And so I feel like, you know, for close to an hour, I'm mostly like, okay, this is fun. This is, you know, I'm digging this. But then, you know, here and there, you know, I think the competitions run a little long. I think honestly, the strategy portion is one of the more boring segments for me. I don't know. Like, there's just nothing there.
Yeah, there is. It's not the meat and potatoes I'm used to, like, getting to digest a lot of gameplay. And it is an hour, 22 minutes. You know, this is kind of in the same boat as Australian Survivor. Mm-hmm. We're getting bigger episodes. We're getting quite a bit of character stuff. The problem being that I feel like the first, like, 2/3 of the episode are character driven, are moments in the house driven. And then we have the competition, and then the strategy kind of starts after that. And by then, because it's focused on like the three nominees and one of them doesn't even really get much, it's not been the best. I agree with you. It's not been the most fun aspect of it for me. And I have been watching on a quicker pace just because in preparation to, you know, come on and do the podcast and stuff, I wanted to make sure I got everything, all the content in. So I've been watching on 1.5 to double speed, thanks to the different versions I found. And it didn't hurt it at all. Like, I got everything I needed to get from it. And overall, it's been good. But I do think that this is just, it's just such a weird way for me to consume Big Brother, because this isn't the Big Brother that I know, right? But also, it's not the Big Brother UK that I like. No, it's not like that format either. It's like you and Rob said, it's this weird hybrid between Canada and UK is what I'm finding. And it's edited like a Survivor season would be. So there's it's a whole new animal for me.
Yeah. And I feel like, you know, in the entertainment business, right? Like they love to pitch things like, oh, it's a mix. It's like, you know, Die Hard meets Arrival. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, you know, they love to just combine two other popular things or three other popular things. But like often you find that they don't understand what made those things work. And I kind of feel like that's what happened here in some ways. I feel like they've taken all of these elements from these like sort of three different versions of Big Brother or Survivor, and they've just kind of chucked them in a box and said go. But they don't, it feels like some of the weaknesses of those shows have come into this box, whereas some of the strengths of some of like the right combinations and formulas have not found their way in. And I think that's sort of part of where it's hurting, but I don't want to be too negative here, because there's fun stuff to talk about as well.
Yeah, no, there's definitely a lot of fun stuff in the middle here that we're getting, and that I'm sure we're going to get with some of the longer some of these characters stay in the house. But I also do think that, you know, in a world where we've decided that a croissant and a donut is a cronut and that's great, this has potentials to be of that caliber, but it could also be a wasabi milkshake where it's like, well, these two don't belong. Like, don't put that together.
Yeah.
That's not a good time. But I do think a lot will be said, because this is kind of the introductory season into this new format for Big Brother Australia, that a lot will be drawn from who ends up winning and what kind of game that person played, you know, kind of like when Richard Hatch wins Survivor and now it's all like, make your alliances and play cutthroat. And then Dr. Will wins Big Brother, season two. And then that changes that kind of as well. So I feel like whoever wins this will kind of narrate where the direction is for the future seasons, at least like the next one.
Yes. All right. So I got Rob's thoughts on some of these cast members, but he had only really watched the premiere up until that point. And so I want to get your thoughts and give my thoughts on these people. We've been introduced to all of them now. And so I want to get some thoughts here. I've got the list up and it's in alphabetical order. So we'll start with Queen Angela here. How do you feel about Angela, and how do you feel about tea?
I love tea. I have myself an English breakfast tea right here. I did want to avoid having a third coffee, so I went with a tea.
Puya, it doesn't sound like you have tea right now.
I mean, I don't know what
I'm not hearing any moaning. I'm not hearing any, you know, pleasure gasps.
Well, you're not going to get a pleasure gasp out of me out of tea, especially not on the podcast. But I'm also, my tea satisfaction has been quenched, ? So I'm not in the Angela boat on that. I will say I kind of understand where she's coming from. But look, Angela Taryn is our saving grace if this pagonging happens, because she's part of the original entrance into the house. She's a character that I think is going to continue to keep on giving. I'm intrigued to see what the public's opinion on her is moving forward, because I think us Big Brother watchers, you know, we watch this kind of stuff. We like the Diary Room. We like authentic people. This is good. But then is the public going to think she's too cranky and they're not going to like that? I don't know. But I've been enjoying Angela. I think she's been a very fun character so far.
Yeah, I think the thing about Angela is that you like, you know, you get the intro package from Angela and she does, she's very funny, but she does seem like she could be mean, right? Like that she is very, you know, it seems like she could look down at people who don't have much money, right? That's kind of the impression that you could get from her in that intro package. But in the house, she seems like she's despite the fact that she complains a lot, she seems like she's very kind. She seems like she's very empathetic, and that she's willing to, you know, like hang out with Kieran, who's, you know, kind of an outcast, or at least it seems, and that she's very funny, and she is like, you know, even though she's complaining at times, she's still very in the experience, or at least that's what it feels like. And so I think all of those things help combine to like be like, no, this isn't even just necessarily a character that is fun to watch, but she's also like just a well-rounded and engaging character, I think.
I think so too. And I think I haven't really watched much Big Brother outside of our own North American editions. I've watched I've watched two seasons of UK. And what I found is that the person at the end who ends up getting a more popular look or a vote or anything like that is someone who has a narrative from the beginning and someone who like grows and evolves while they're in the house. And you're right. Angel, my first impression of Angela was like, wow, she's a little bougie. You know, she's like talking about how she comes from the Beverly Hills area within Kenya, and she can't, you know, she has people doing all her bidding, and why can't I have my tea? But I am also seeing the empathetic side of her. I am also seeing that there's, you know, her name has not come up really outside of the first episode for like people looking at her and wanting her out. So I think she's doing something right there. And I think if her arch ends up being, you know, if she keeps growing and growing and she ends up becoming this nice person, this humble version of herself, I could see her standing a chance at the end on a vote and doing really well. I think she's one of the ones that, based on what I've seen three episodes in, I think it's going to be one of the big characters of the season.
Yeah. So. And so, I mean, you said you kind of can understand her obsession with tea. I don't. when, like, she is obsessed with tea. Yeah. To like, she was like out of her mind that they would not have tea. And then when she finally gets tea, she is so giddy. Like this is her lifeblood. Like what is going on here? Why is tea so important? I'd get it if it was coffee, right? Because people get addicted to caffeine. And I know that there can be some caffeine in tea, but not nearly the amount in coffee, right? You're not going to get like addicted to tea, right? Right?
No, I mean, not necessarily. But then also I think of it because I come from a Persian background, and this is how the afternoon was set up in my household. So my mom would put the kettle on about like 5, 6 p.m. when she woke up from a nap. And then from 6 p.m. until like 2 when she would go to sleep, she would have about 5 cups. My dad would have 3 cups. I would have a couple cups. It's a very, very big part of the day to day. So very similarly to how I feel about coffee personally, is like, don't talk to me if I haven't had my first coffee yet. Some people are like that with tea. You know, I know in the British, in the UK culture, it's a big thing. It's prominent. So I think it's just become like a habitual, like, it's like for you, right? It's like, if you didn't have your daily yogurt, I feel like you might be a little cranky. You'd be like, well, I don't need it, but I'm used to it. So I need it. Right.
I like to joke about yogurt, but if I didn't have my yogurt, I think I'd be all right.
Yeah. You wouldn't be moaning about it.
Yeah, I'll tell you, when I've been traveling and I come back, because I haven't been eating any yogurt since I've been traveling, and I come back home and I have my first yogurt, I don't go.
Yeah, it doesn't give you all that rush that Angela got, that satisfaction.
I'm just kind of like, all right, I got some yogurt.
Yeah, it's not that deep. Ultimately, it really isn't or shouldn't be. But for some reason, this is like the one thing Angela wants, right? It's her one vice by the sound.
Yes. All right. So next on the list is Casey. And I got to say, I think the only thing I remember about her is that she was like really indignant about Kieran and saying like, you have to apologize for what you did when you campaigned in the first week. How dare you campaign, Kieran? You'd better apologize to me.
Yeah, I don't remember much else about her either. To be honest, I keep confusing her with Sophie here and there. I still haven't gotten enough to learn about her, but given that one interaction with Kieran, it leads me to feel like I'm not gonna enjoy Casey, but also I haven't seen enough of Casey to form a solid opinion. Mm-hmm. Similarly to some other people on this cast, which I'm sure will like gloss over just like the show did.
Yes. Next on the list is Chad, who I know is a model.
Yeah. You know, they talk about the slang for what a Chad is, and a Chad's like the frat guy, you know, a douchey hot guy. It is him. He's a model. He's, you know, attractive. He was the guy that he came in the second night, right? Or the yes. second episode. Yeah. I'm sure we'll see him end up, you know, trying to hook up with someone or like flirt with someone. I feel like that's in the cards for him. Outside of that, no one's really talking about Chad, and he doesn't have the, you know, any stigma of being athletic quite yet. So
yeah,
I'm pretty quiet.
I feel like sometimes when I'm looking at a new cast of people on a reality show, sometimes I'm just like, does the casting person, are they just like trying to find their ideal mate? Like, you know what I mean? Like, did somebody just like, cause this happens all the time with both guys, and we'll talk about Hannah too, cause I feel like she's pretty similar, where it's just like, here's a very attractive person, and here's why he's perfect. He loves his dog. He loves his mom. He also works construction, guys. Come on. He's down to earth. Like, he is the perfect man. And I'm just imagining a person in casting just like in love with this guy. And just like, well, I don't know if I can be with him, but at least I can cast him on the show.
Right. It's kind of like it hits them like a Tinder profile that they really like. Yeah. But it's like, and it's got like, you know, the tropes that you mentioned. So, you know, the dog is there, family person is there, and then fitness. And then there's a picture of him at like Rome. And then in the bio, it says something to the sort of like, still love a good Taco Tuesday. And they're like, oh my God, he's perfect. Give me him.
Yeah. Yeah. Next up is Daniel. And so Daniel is the AFL, which I haven't sat down to like reason out what those letters stand for. Australian Football League.
Yes.
All right. And by football, they mean not American football, but also not soccer.
But and also not rugby. Yeah, I believe it's meant to be closer to American football.
Hmm.
I think that's the case there. I know Shannon Gus is a big AFL person. I've never really watched, but from what I've gathered based on, you know, watching Australian Survivor and how they cast rugby players and footy players, I think it's like the middle of the two. It's the middle of the NFL and the rugby league.
Yeah. Don't worry, everyone. We will have Australians to help us out next week. By next week, I will have an Australian correspondent to tell me things about Australia. I promise.
Because we are drawing blanks.
Never mind. Go ahead. This doesn't say anything to me about what this sport is.
It didn't help you at all. So Daniel's, he was an unsuccessful player based on what we got, the video package from him.
He made it to big leagues, I think, but wasn't, didn't do well in the big leagues.
Mm-hmm. I see. Yeah. And he's doing pretty well for himself in this house by the looks of it. You know, him and Talia have this kind of like, will they, won't they going on that kind of started with like, I don't like you. So that's a thing. He is a house snorer. So that's a thing we've learned. And he's intimidated by athletic men. Who would have thought?
Can I just say, I'm reading the rules for Australian football, and yeah. I feel like I'm just reading about Quidditch. There's an oval field. Points are scored by kicking the oval ball between the middle goalposts, worth 6 points, and between a goal behind the post, worth 1 point.
Okay, it kind of does hit like, so it's like a game of field goals. Oh, we're going to get, people aren't going to be happy that we're not footy fans, but I mean, I have to see it to understand it, people. So it's all good.
Yeah, I guess instead of like running it into the end zone, you have to kick it. It's like,
kick it in.
Yeah, it's like basketball, but with your feet.
Feet kickball.
And no basket.
No. So yeah, so it's like they took field goal from football. They took the basket element without the basket from basketball. And then they took the oval ball from rugby, maybe. Again, this is a hybrid situation, but a lot of things in one.
Yes. Well, apparently requires, or at least Daniel seems to be helped out by, he's very tall, very, very fit. And he is also, I don't know if this helps in footy, but a big snorer.
Yes, big snore, which you've already talked to Rob about this, but the big brother voice shaming him for his nose was a choice.
Yeah,
that was right. Crazy.
Big brother is a bully.
I mean, Daniel played ball. I can only imagine if I was in that situation, I'd be like, I'm sorry, who do you think you're talking to? Like, you're just going to roast me? But yeah. I do like the sassiness of Big Brother.
Yeah, I like sassiness. Let's not cross the line into being mean, right?
Yeah.
But yes, Daniel so far seems like he seems to be portrayed as running the house with Talia, who we'll talk about. It seems to be, I think they're trying to make him out to be like the more tolerable of the pair, perhaps, despite the fact that he's still a villain, or at least, you know, the not against Hannah for no reason. And so I guess that's something there. But I don't think we're supposed to be rooting for him.
I don't think so either. I feel like if you're put out to be the snore, no one likes that. So automatically that's not good. And I do think out of the pair, he is portrayed as a more tolerable, but also I think the fact that he just zeroes in on Subong and just the athleticism and gets intimidated and stuff. I don't think there's any way he's being seen as a good guy, but I do think that his whole storyline is going to be, you know, he was kind of, he didn't have the success in footy, but he's going to come in here and he's going to have success here. And I'm sure his athleticism is going to come into play somehow. I'm sure.
Yeah. So then there's Danny, and honestly, I've got nothing. I don't know.
Same.
I don't know who she is.
Tune in next week for Danny. We got nothing.
I've watched three episodes of an hour and a half, and I have no idea who this person is.
Yeah, and at least Danny's saving grace is that Danny was brought in to the to the mix episode 3. There's people on here.
Oh, she came in the third episode.
Yeah. Danny had a Subong and Shane came in the third episode.
Okay. Well, there you go. Then there's Garth, who I do know. He won the second head of household. Other than that, though, other than the fact that he really wanted Alan out, I don't know much about him. I guess he's one of the cooks. I know that.
Mm-hmm. I think that Garth had probably the best episode one would want to have, a standalone episode. He gets introduced in episode 2. He wins the nomination comp. He puts up his target and he gets his target out. And then he kind of went underground for episode 3. So that's a good showing there. I think Garth's someone that we're going to see again. He's intriguing. He seems like he's going to be fun. I could see him being someone who ends up embracing more and more gameplay as we go on deeper into the season. But he's also sociable enough that he can have people like be likable to people. So there, I see a lot of potential here with Garth. And I think out of the night 2 entrants, I would argue that Garth probably easily the best of the 4 to start night 2.
Yeah, I think so as well. Then we've got Hannah, who is a new entry into the house, made a big splash. Hannah did. I like Hannah though. She seems perfectly fine.
I like Hannah too. I mean, I like that they kind of went with the Poker Alliance approach of editing of like, oh, she, so Sarah was the one who didn't like her.
That was great. So Sarah was like, oh, I don't like her. She's a try hard. And then they cut to the like open call or whatever it was where they were both there and they actually had the footage, which I thought was fantastic. I loved that.
Same. Going to a group, their group audition footage to show her being outspoken. And that's not really a try hard, but I feel like we all know in that process, you're meant to be as, you know, animated as possible. You're trying to put a good impression. You're trying to prove to someone, put me on television. So that's all, you know, good. But Sarah just seemed like she did not want to mess with Hannah at all.
Yeah.
Like, like Hannah's still in this cage submerged above the studio, and Sarah's already like, that's a tryhard. We don't want her. We need to get rid of her immediately. But having seen Hannah for an episode, I mean, she didn't, you know, I'm not crazy about her, but also I feel like she's okay. You know, she could be fun.
Here's what I don't know. Here's what I like about Hannah, right? It's very obvious that she came in and that she was disliked because, like, she's pretty and the guys liked her, right? Like, and she's told this later. And yet she never says, she's never the one that says, oh, they just don't like me because I'm so pretty and they're so jealous.
Right.
She is totally cool about it. She's like, she's not going to dive into that. She's above it. I love it.
No, I like that too. You know, because it seems like she's aware of what's going on, but she's not going to let that define her story.
Yes.
She's not going to let that define what she's doing. And I think she's on a mission now to, you know, prove them wrong. And honestly, by the end of her first episode, it looks like she's already righted that wrong and should be fine coming into next week.
We'll see. I hope so. Then we've got Ian, who is definitely a character, hasn't had too much of a presence on the show, I feel like, but he's always there, and he's always, you know, he's just like a sweet guy.
He's a sweet guy. You know, he hasn't really had many interactions with humans, and it's adorable, and he's an animal lover. He comes from the bush. I feel like Ian is someone who, kind of in the Angela situation for me, where I could see him having a growing arc, someone who's going to learn a lot, improve a lot, and like become more sociable, kind of like a Woody from The Circle season 2 of the UK, if you will. Like starts, you know, becoming a bigger voice and like gets the respect of the peers around him. We haven't seen enough of him yet, but I think he's got enough quirky awkwardness, but also niceness about him that we're going to see him for a hot minute. I think Mel on Twitter talked about Ian being Ross Geller, and I could see that.
I don't know who that is.
You don't watch Friends, so it's cool.
Yeah. Okay. Ross from Friends. Okay. I feel like with like the Ian character, right? Like the, you know, I haven't really interacted with people before kind of person. You can go one of two ways. Either it's going to be like, ooh, a little creepy, or like, aw, really sweet, you know? And I feel like he's on the really sweet side of things. And I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, I would say so as well. I feel similarly about that.
Then we've got Kieran, who, by all estimations, I think is the star of the show, but I'm not entirely sure why.
I know. Is it because he came into the house first and was given the grand mission? Is it because he represents super fans of the show? I can't quite decide. Is it because he's kind of like the average person who is like in a sea of attractive, very animated people and is trying to get by? There's like a couple ways it could go with him storyline wise, but they haven't told us which one we need to pay attention to. And he's just been nominated twice in a row, and maybe that's it. I can't quite put my finger on why Kieran's such a big player outside of maybe we'll see him go far. But also maybe we'll see him fizzle out real soon and maybe he doesn't have 9 lives.
Yeah, I mean, look, if Kieran is in the final 3, then let me stake my claim. All right, this was rigged from the start. This was there was no shot for anybody else. Because I feel like the entire story has been told from his perspective at this point. Like, we're constantly checking in with him. He is on the outs. And thus, I feel like we are on the outs. We don't know what's happening with the cool kids because Kieran doesn't know what's happening with the cool kids.
That's right. Because even in episode 3, when he wasn't in danger, I feel like we still got his vision more than other people. We're on this journey with Kieran. It's if we were putting VR glasses on, we're putting on glasses of his view.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That being said, you've already touched on this with Rob. His mission at the start was like funny. There were good moments, but then like the massaging was kind of weird for me to see, especially in 2020. It's like, come on, like you guys need to know better about this. But Kieran, you know, he's fun. I think he'll be more fun as it goes along. I just love that the weird pairing is Angela and Kieran. Like, I would have never expected these two to be friends, and they're a duo at this point.
Which is great. I love the pairing.
Same.
And then we've got Marissa, who, you know, she definitely became somebody that I now know because of the third episode, where she really started to be a bit more aggressive after being nominated. But we'll get into that. Are you a fan of Marissa?
I mean, all I knew about Marissa coming into episode 3 was she claimed she brought aerobics to Australia. So that's all I knew about her. That was her personality. And then by episode 3, the personality jumped out. She got a little loud. She got a little angry. And I was pleasantly surprised to see that side of her, because I really thought she was going to be the tame, older person in the house that eventually just slides to the end or gets like taken out in a, I wanted to go down the middle and like pick someone harmless.
Yeah.
But I think after this, I'm intrigued to see where she goes, because she did a lot this last episode.
Yeah. Now we are going to take a quick break for our sponsors and we'll be right back. And we're back. So let's get back to the show. Then we have Matt, and I know who he is because he's like the bald guy, but beyond that, got nothing.
No, Matt with one T. That's all I know about him. I don't remember seeing him beyond, because when he was brought into the house, it was like smushed in between Kieran doing his like introductions with everyone and trying to give them nicknames. So Matt kind of came and went, and we haven't really seen him since. So that's one of the two people on the list for me that I don't know anything about outside of their name.
Yeah. Then there's Sarah, who definitely had a breakout episode in episode 3. Not sure if it's the right way to break out, though. Not the best look to be so seemingly petty and we see the footage of this, you know, open call audition thing, and it's like Anna's not doing anything wrong. Like the point of an audition is to get attention, right? And so if Hannah's demanding attention in the audition, then she's doing what she's supposed to do. But it does seem like there's a little bit of a redeeming factor toward the end of the episode. And I'm curious to see where Sarah goes.
Yeah, I feel like Sarah right out the gate was made to seem petty and just like snap judgment type of person. But then I don't know what got into her by the end of the episode, where it was very clear that she regretted the decision. She's like, I judged too soon. I don't know if it was like, you know, word got back to her that Hannah knows what's going on. I'm not sure exactly.
I think it's important to know Sarah's 19 years old. She's very young. And I think that plays a big role into the snap judgment and then the regret, like, you know, that she's kind of learning about, you know, how to be still, I think.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's fair. That's definitely something that, you know, damn, Taryn, it just dawned on me that I was 19 9 years ago. And that's,
I know, right? Her birthday was she was born in 2001.
Oof. Oh, my God. Okay. before we go full like quarter life crisis here, let's move on.
All right. So Shane. He joined in the third episode, and I don't know anything about him.
Yeah, he was one of two guys to join in the third episode, and he is the one person from the third episode that got nothing. He is not the next guy, and the next guy, we're going to have a lot to say about him. We'll see what Shane does coming down the line here, but honestly, I have no opinion because I've not seen him.
Mm-hmm. Then there's Sophie, who I also don't really know anything about.
Yeah, Sophie was the one that I kept confusing with Casey. I don't have much on her.
One of them got told off by Marissa. I think it was it Sophie?
I think it was Sophie. I think it was Sophie because, yeah, I know. You know what? I'm going to say it was Sophie. Yeah, let's go with that. Again, Sophie, not much of an opinion here to form yet. We'll keep an eye on.
Or was it Zoe?
You know what? So we'll have to keep an eye on either Sophie, Casey, or Zoe's interactions with Marissa moving forward.
Yeah. Basically. Yeah. Then there's Talia, who is another one of the stars of the show, but not in a good way. They are burying her, and for seemingly good reason. Now, look, I want to be clear here, in case anybody is new to me talking about edited shows, but I don't take anything from an edited show at face value. I will talk about it as though it's at face value because we don't have anything else to go off of, but, right. But like, it is very easy to make somebody look very bad on an edited show. And so for all we know, you know, she is, you know, not, at least not as bad as she's portrayed here. But she's portrayed pretty poorly, in terms of like the really weird treatment of Hannah, the sort of, I don't know what you would call like the she's feel like she's queen bee over the house, even though that should be Angela, the queen bee. And she's like just really seems to have a big sense of entitlement.
Yeah, I feel like looking at her rap sheet, it's very easy to, you know, take what they got from her content wise and turn her into the villain. She's won two competitions, so you can argue that she's been in charge of getting rid of two people. So that's on her. She is young and attractive, and like everyone wants to be her friend. So it's very easy to make her be the mean girl, right? Based like using editing to do that. However, I feel like there's more to the story that we're not getting with Talia. She's one of the more, I'm intrigued to see where she goes, because before her winning her first competition, I didn't think I was going to care about her at all. Mm-hmm. And now that I have a vested interest in seeing where her story goes. And if she does end up being the top villain of the season, then that's giving me some kind of content, some kind of, you know, one side versus the other side kind of thing that I would like to see. So that's good. I would prefer if at some point her and Daniel become foes. That would be fun. That would be a rivalry I want to watch, but I don't think we're going in that direction. So once they link up, I'm out. Once they're a showmance, I'm over her and Daniel.
If Daniel like fell for Hannah and Talia became like vengeful, you know, that would be a fun storyline.
Yeah, get the popcorn ready for that. Now that's what I want. So
then there's Xavier, who is I just think of him as Surfer Bro. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he surfs, but I think of him as Surfer Bro. And I knew nothing about him until the third episode when he was like, I don't want Subong gone. And I was like, good for you, Xavier.
Yeah, to have the coolest name in the cast and then not have any content is worrisome. Like, the man has Xavier as a name. Like, that's incredible. But we're not talking about him. We're not seeing him. He does have the Surfer Bro look to him. So far, we agree with his outlook on the house and the game and the people. So that's good. But literally, there is nothing there to separate him with Shane, him with Matt, him with Danny. There's like at least four or five people that we don't know. And he, to me, I'm most intrigued about Taryn simply because of his name.
Mm. Then we have Zoe, who is on the block in the first week. And still was a non-entity, and then I think was told off by Marissa in the third episode, but beyond that, not much.
Yeah, no, beyond that, not much going on. She, again, had to have had some kind of content because she was up the first episode, and then since I can't say that I've really seen her or that I've formed an opinion on her, she's also a TBD on how I feel about Zoe moving forward.
Mm. Then we have one of my favorite players who came and went very quickly, Subong. I was very sad to see him go. I was spoiled before I even watched the episode that he was going to be voted out. So the second he was introduced, I was like, no, stop being so fun. I got to lose you.
Yeah. No, he was very intriguing to me. The fact that he's this older guy, he's a father, but then he's like the most jacked person and he's doing these like insane push-ups. I can't do a regular push-up and he's doing finger push-ups. Like, that's crazy to me. He looked like he was going to be a lot of fun. He was going to be very entertaining. And I'm upset that we were robbed of having him there for longer, which this was kind of the perfect time for me to ask you, Taryn. Why weren't the people that just entered deemed safe for the first nomination? Shouldn't they have been deemed safe for at least the first cycle?
Yeah. 100%. Typically what they do in the North American formats. And they do it for good reason, that if somebody immediately joins, it's very easy to just immediately send them out, which makes for boring TV. If you force them to eat their own, then it might create cracks and shake things up enough to give the new players a chance to work their way in. But when you're able to, when you allow them to just close ranks, then, you know, we see what we saw.
And this is kind of the problem of the specific hybrid product that we've been given, because, you know, Big Brother is kind of a show where you different walks of life, you come in and you're trying to, like, it's a social experiment. So especially in Australia, where it wasn't played strategically. So Subog's coming in and showing himself, right? This is who he is. Yes, he's physical. He's doing all this stuff, but this is who he is. He's giving his first impression, and you're allowing them, no matter, he could have been the best person they've ever met. They have no reason to keep him now because he wasn't there at the beginning. This is also why, you know, shows like The Circle do the exact same thing as well, where the person that gets introduced last, they're safe for that round because they got to feel free enough to want to give, you know, impressions and show who they are. Because if this is the way it is now, next season, whoever comes in day three, the move is to be quiet, be a Danny, don't be a Subong, you know, don't show yourself, don't be friendly, don't try and, like, acclimate, because they'll just get rid of you. And that's awful, because I think we were robbed of probably the most entertaining person, for me personally.
I feel like it's almost like these Big Brother four, it's like this is the Game of Thrones of Big Brother, right? Like when you have the formula that makes Big Brother work, you can make a good show. But when you think, no, I'm cleverer than the formula, I'm smarter than George R. R. Martin, I know how to end this story well, then you go off the rails and you start making all kinds of mistakes because you never fully understood what made it great in the first place. My point being, they don't understand the game. They don't understand, like, if you're going to introduce voting and stuff, you need to have certain things in place. You need to balance the game. You need to make sure that it's going to work for TV, and I feel like they don't have enough experience or understanding about what makes it work to get it right.
Yeah, no, I feel that, because, and honestly, the problem here being, it's too much of in the middle and it doesn't know which direction it wants to go, and that makes it hard for the players to be forced to pick a side. You know, when Angela is worried about tea and the food budget and the rations, she's not going to play. And then when you're putting them in a position where, also another thing, the person who wins the nomination thing can just win it every week, every cycle without worry, you know? So that's a problem in and of itself, because someone could just run the gambit if they're lucky enough. So that's a thing as well. Like, there's a lot of tinkering helps at some points. You know, obviously we've had different things that have changed, different twists that have come up that have, you know, enhanced the experience. But more often than not, what we've learned having watched all these North American ones, especially in the company that I'm in right now, I know that Taryn Armstrong is against tinkering when it doesn't need to be tinkered with. So,
Well, mostly because the people doing the tinkering don't know what they're doing, right? Like, if I have an expert repairman, you know, tinkering with my vacuum cleaner, then I want this person to tinker with the vacuum cleaner. If I have, if I try to tinker with my vacuum cleaner, then I'm going to be like, no, get out of there, Taryn. You're an idiot. Don't tinker with it. You don't know what you're doing. You're going to screw it up. And I think the problem is that not enough people understand the game that they're creating, that they're broadcasting well enough to tinker with it without screwing things up. I think that's a bit of a problem. And I also think it's a bit of a problem that we have gone through most of this cast at this point, and there are a bunch of them that we know nothing about, despite having watched 3 hour and a half episodes.
Yeah, like we're nearing 5 hours worth of content, and I can't talk about Matt, Xavier. I'm mixing Sophie, Zoe, and Casey up. Like it's that's crazy. And I don't know. I've never been a fan of like, you know, day two bringing new people in after like the first people have gone. They did it twice in a row. Maybe if it was two batches, like kind of like a BB16 of mm-hmm. 8 and 8, that would have worked better because then it kind of puts the 8 people on a side together and the other 8 on a side together.
Or but 10
this
is and 10. An 8-4.
Yeah. Yeah. Like putting this 8 weird, like 12-4-4 method, kind of made it so that even the third night and the second night people don't really know each other. And then the second night and the first night people don't know each other. So it's kind of already in its own way built an onion that yeah. if it pagongs is all on them 100%, given that also the same person can keep winning competitions and no one got immunity for being there for the first cycle. So these are things that I would hope, you know, in the next season that we see get retinkered and fixed. But again, the problem is a lot will be discovered based on what people think, based on what their feedback is, and based on who ends up winning the season.
Yeah, and I read, and I don't know if this is like completely canon or completely fact, but I read that the producers were like a little disappointed in the cast this season. Which I, you know, we'll talk about a little bit later. I think there's definitely some criticism we can make of the cast itself. But yeah. I think in terms of like the TV they're making, I think this is more on the structure of the game than it is on the cast. I think that, you know, it's the what we're seeing is less so the cast being boring and more so the game dictating a boring product.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say so. And, you know, even if this cast is like big fans of BBAU, this is a different product they're getting, right? But they're used to what they know. So they're playing, a lot of them, I think, are playing it the way they remember it being. Whereas like someone like Kieran, clearly I'm going to assume, because I haven't looked at the bios for any of the players, but I'm going to go ahead and assume that Kieran, when he says he's a super fan, he's been watching North American, because I'm also getting, like, I see the way he's trying to pedal and fix things and strategize, and that doesn't scream AU Big Brother to me.
Mm-hmm. All right. So there's also, of course, Alan, who was fun. Like, I liked his presence because he talked strategy, and now I feel like there's nobody talking. But the strategy he talked was, like, very, like, level one, you know, like, very basic, like, I'm going to get these guys, but he clearly wasn't, you know? But it was a good energy.
It was vague and it was loud.
Yeah.
But it was strategy. That's how I took it as well. And I think I was excited after seeing his, you know, his first episode show. I was like, he's high energy, so I'm going to enjoy him. He's going to play. That's fun. But then I think Alan took out Alan. I really think that Alan was his own worst enemy, ultimately. And it was sad to see him go, especially when he's getting in the car and he's angry and upset at why they did this. He's devastated. It's like, you did too much, but it worries me because we got someone that was very high energy, very much talked about strategy, and now we kind of don't have that anymore. So,
Puya, only yes. Alan could take out Alan.
Yeah.
Only Alan is good enough to take Alan out of the game.
You know who had Alan's name on their lips the most? Alan.
He probably went into the diary room to vote, and it was just like, so Alan is going to vote for... Alan is voting for, no, hold on. No, I didn't vote for hold on.
No, sorry. We heard Alan. That was the first name you said. That's over. You voted for yourself.
And then of course, Laura, who I talked to Rob about, we didn't really see anything from her before her unfortunate demise in the game. You know, it didn't play out particularly well.
Yeah, Laura was someone who I thought was going to have promise, especially seeing her bio to start. And then she was competitive. I appreciated that. You know, she almost had that first competition. Talia just barely took it over at the end. She was someone who I think was going to be no nonsense, but was also going to bring in some competitiveness to it. And I think by getting rid of what I would argue the biggest rival to Talia from the jump, kind of sets the precedent of it's going to be a slower game. So I wasn't happy about that. I thought she was going to have a lot to offer, and we were robbed of that.
Mm. So we talked about the first episode with Rob. Was there anything from the premiere that that really stood out to you that you want to talk about?
Yeah, so I even when Tim Dormer came through for BB Can, I had not watched any clips from BBAU. My only knowledge would have been BBUK being the closest thing. So I enjoyed seeing, you know, so I liked the host. I liked that their voting ceremony was kind of like a half tribal, half voting ceremony, like regular. So that was fun-ish. I enjoyed Big Brother being a person that's having a conversation with them, kind of empathetic, kind of sassy. I enjoyed that. The house is great. I think the premiere was great, but then I was shocked when the next two episodes were also the same duration of time. So I was like, oh, hour 22 premiere makes sense. Then episode 2. Oh, hour 22 second episode. Okay. Oh, episode 3. So that was a little bit, but I thought overall the premiere was strong enough to make me want to press start on episode 2, even though the wind was kind of removed when Laura was the one who went.
Mm-hmm. And so we head into episode 2 and we get the new batch of people, which is Chad, Garth, Danny. No, Danny was new in the third one. Keep Chad, screwing her up. Sarah and Sophie.
I think Sophie.
Yes.
Either Sophie or Casey.
It was Sophie. I know Sophie. It was Sophie. Casey was okay. Original. And so those four join the house. And I think I briefly mentioned this on the premiere podcast, but when they walk in, or maybe I didn't because we didn't talk about episode 2. They walk in and the task immediately is go find a bed. Get in that bed and stay in that bed until morning. If anybody catches you, then you lose. And I was like, after the massage thing, I was like, hold on.
Yeah.
Because we didn't know there was a separate bedroom yet. And so I was like, if they have to climb in bed with unexpecting people, these tiny little beds, and not, this is, and like, they got undressed. And I was like, why are you getting undressed? You're making it weirder.
Yeah, no, this was on the verge of being a 5 oofer for me. I was really worried where that was going. Because my initial reaction was, wait, that's really weird. And then I thought, yeah, is it going to be like, I believe, was it Eric Stein who had to do something like that for America's Player? Get next? Did he go next to Joe? I don't remember exactly.
Yeah, I remember who it was.
Yeah. So like, I was like, is it that kind of mission? But also like they know each other, you know, like Eric knows.
Can you imagine waking up
to some Garth next to me? Bed. Like, yeah. Or Chad. I'm like, who are you, good sir? Like, why are you here? And like, they're not, these aren't like queen size bed. This is like a single. Like,
yeah.
Oh my. Yeah. No. And then when I saw, when we found out there was a second bedroom, then I went the other end. I was like, well, this doesn't seem that hard. Like you're in another bedroom that you don't know exists. So how is this a mission? Except for bathroom breaks.
Yeah, it wasn't a great mission when you find out. It wasn't, because it wouldn't have been a great mission either way. But I also feel like they really opened the door for Chad to walk in, start touching beds, and then either not feel a person in there and climb in, or think, oh, well, all the beds are taken. I guess we're supposed to slide in with a person. And like, just be careful, guys.
It got a little worrisome. I'm glad it didn't end up being a thing, happily. But yikes. It's a big yikes. If you're listening to this and you're trying to retinker for next time, this is something you want to reconsider probably.
Yeah. But then they're introduced. Of course, we're going to see that Daniel and Talia are not a fan of the new people. I'm sure most of them weren't a fan of the new people. But because why would you be? That's 4 more people that you have to get through before you can get to the end. but of course, Daniel and Talia are going to take the heat for this one because they are the villains of the season. They are then going to compete in a competition where it's there's snow, which I think is a rarity for Australia.
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah. And the competition is that they have to get through a block of ice, pull out a flag and wave the flag, and then they've won the head of household. It is called head of household, right?
No, it's like a nomination something. Yeah. I don't remember. I didn't write that part down, I don't think. But I don't remember hearing it be head of household.
Nomination challenge. Yeah, it's called the nomination challenge. But who do you get a title for winning?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, it looks like the wiki says that it labels you nominator.
Okay.
They need better titles.
Definitely. The nominator does not sound enticing at all.
They have to get through a block of ice. This is a pretty staple challenge for like early days of Big Brother. They did one of these, I think, in Big Brother 2, for a luxury challenge, I think it was. Not surprising to see something like it here. And they are going to do all of the staples of getting through a block of ice, like pee on it, use your clothes, blow on it, like all sorts of things.
Yeah. What do you think is the ideal strategy to melt the block of ice? Is it just pick one area and continue to like exhale onto it to soften it up? Or is it find high heels and just start stomping on the side with the high heels?
I think it depends on the thickness of the block of ice in mm-hmm. general, but I think breathing on it is usually not the way to go. I think that it's probably going to be an ineffective tactic. I think you think of it because like if you breathe in your hands, it warms them up. But like in terms of, a block of ice, I don't think it's going to get you very far. I think physical force, creating friction on the ice. I saw somebody with like a shirt that they were like moving back and forth over the ice. I thought that was pretty good. I didn't see a lot of what Garth was doing, it looked like he had focused in on one point and was really getting that one area to go, which is of course the right strategy.
Yeah, and like part of the rules were, so you have to use your body, what you're wearing, nothing more, like nothing else, and you couldn't break the flag, which was scary because by the end, when some of them were trying to yank it out, it looked like it was mm-hmm. gonna snap in half. So that was a thing.
Like what you're wearing to me implies you can't go get more things to wear.
Because, I mean, if that's me, I'm just going to go put on as many shirts as possible and just get real nice and snug. Because then, obviously, if you have more layers on, you're less likely to feel the ice on your body if you're hugging it, right? So then I'm just going to give it a bear hug and just, like, move around it and stuff.
Yeah,
so
I'm going to find a hammer loop it into my belt. Like, hey, I'm wearing it.
I mean, that would not be that seems like a loophole that should be allowed. If wearing heels is allowed, like right. getting heels to wear, like, I'm sorry, but you should be allowed to just get anything as a utility as long as it fits on your person.
Yeah. Some boots. Did anybody bring boots, like steel-toed boots or something?
Steel-toed boots would be very quick victory.
Right.
Yeah. Now, as someone who's like paced around in the winter at night on break at work, just kicking stuff. Yeah, it definitely helps. It'll break ice. Mm-hmm. So
I felt again, this competition, it was fun at first. It went a little long for me.
Yeah. I mean, the novelty wears off quick, right? Especially if we're just getting constant samey and nothing's changed. The one fun part was when, was it Daniel or was it Chad? I think it was Daniel. Wanted to pee on the ice, and Big Brother yes. was kind of goading him to do it.
Yes, Daniel was trying to pee on the ice, but he had performance anxiety.
Yeah, yeah, and couldn't do it. I'm happy he failed in doing that. I feel like I'm okay not knowing how that would have ended.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so thumbs up for me.
I mean, I do think if you can pee on it, it's probably going to, that might be a little effective.
It would be effective, but then also you're gonna be gross. Like,
yeah,
it's just how much do you need to or want to win ultimately? But yeah, definitely from what we've learned, covering these shows, is if you're in a place where you have to release believe yourself in order to get victory. Do what you got to do. But the mockery will come after.
Yes. Yes. So Garth ends up winning with Daniel close behind. And Garth, is going to, so it's again, it seems like they just go straight from winning the competition right into the diary room, to make their nominations. They don't really get to talk to anybody about it. Or really, you know, even have much time to think, because they get in there and then Big Brother's like, I need an answer.
Yeah, it doesn't look like they get any time at all, which is interesting to me because they kind of have to make a snap decision and it doesn't allow for a discussion of what they're going to do. It doesn't allow someone else to influence them unless they've already talked about it in advance. But also, I'm aware that in, like, I'm pretty sure both AU and UK, this wasn't a thing, like, you're not allowed to talk about that kind of stuff. So I wonder if they're allowed to, and, like, let's say Garth talked with his second night people and they agreed on these names, or is it just, nope, it's done, Garth, go make your decision without consulting anybody?
As a Big Brother US aficionado, I can tell you that the night of an HOH win where they are discussing nominations tends to be the best night of live feeds, tends to create the best content. It's the shortest amount of time. It's only like, it's less than a 24 hour period most of the time. Mm-hmm. And that, like, less than 24 hour period usually makes up an entire episode. And then the rest of the week, all the other 6 days make up the other two episodes. That's how good the content is from that portion of the game. And so by eliminating that portion of the game, you are missing out, I think, on some good content.
Absolutely. I mean, Taryn, you and I are the ones who we get together for Friday mornings to talk about it. And that's what all that goes down. And it does set a lot, like, it sets the story for what that week is going to be, is that night. So to not have that does stifle it. And given that they put through three names and they can't deliberate or make a decision or be like, have to be, you know, solid with those choices, I feel like takes a lot out of it, because, you know, well, eventually you throw out three names, we're going to lose someone who we don't really want to lose. Right. So I feel like personally, based on what we saw, I don't know if Alan would have been up there if there was only two choices necessarily. Because it seemed like Alan was the last one he chose, unless they moved those names around.
Yeah, well, I mean, it did seem like Garth really wanted Alan out, right?
So Alan looked like he was definitely double dipping. He talked to the new four in their room and kind of said, like, you know, oh, like, yeah, I see what's going on, but, like, I'm with you, you know. So, but I think Garth saw right through that.
Yeah,
but
can we just briefly talk about that too? Like, Garth really did want Alan out. He nominates Alan here, but that doesn't make any sense.
No.
This guy is trying to reach out to us. He's trying to work with us. What a player! What a sneaky guy! I don't want to work with him. He's willing to. He's the guy that you can work with. That's like, no, he's not trustworthy, but that's good for you. It's good to have somebody who's willing to, like, you can throw him under the bus when you need to. Yes. You can use him as a vote when you need to. You are currently 4-12 right now. Why would you take out the one guy willing to hop off the 12 train?
Yeah, no, literally, this is the one person that's reached out, the one person that's willing to feed you information. He's sketchy. You have this read that he's sketchy. Good for you, because in the event that you look like you could be in trouble, you throw that out there. You use that information against the person we find sketchy. But don't be the one who gets rid of them, because someone will get rid of them. Because if you have this read coming in late, people who've been with him have the exact same feeling. So you're not wrong. This was, I think, was a poor choice on Garth's part, because it really was taking someone out who would have, I would argue, would have been in the middle. And the one person that could have been a foil to a lot of Pagong possibilities that could go on here now.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but he does nominate Alan, Angela, and Kieran. And so those are going to be the options. And there's no good option here.
No, we were damned to lose someone fun, polarizing, what have you, in the second episode with these noms, and was not happy about that.
Yeah. And so, there's a lot of talk about it's gotta be Kieran, but most of that talk came from Alan himself. I feel like once again, we don't really know what happened here. Did it change to Alan? Did it really change to Alan, or was it always Alan? Did Garth push it onto Alan? Did Alan screw himself over? We're not entirely sure.
Yeah, we can. Based on what they've shown us, it seems like Alan, in the midst of being confident that, hey, Kieran's a gamer, so I don't need to worry, I don't need to do much, did a lot to tell everyone, hey, Kieran's a gamer, he's doing a lot, and he ended up doing a lot, and that's why he went. But these have been fake outs a little bit, because I think both times for me, I was worried that Kieran's gone, and then they're like, okay, Kieran has two votes. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, okay, so there is stuff that we don't see, because it didn't look like Alan was the foregone conclusion by any stretch of the imagination for me.
Yeah, there was, a little bit of, alluding to the idea that, Kieran is basically, helpless, that he can't do anything, whereas Alan is maybe a little bit more threatening in the game, and so maybe that's why they should take out Alan, but overall, just not a lot of information.
No information at all. But what I will say ultimately is that Alan was a fun two-episode arc. Kieran has a lot more story to give at this point, so we'll see. Because this is a new show for me to sink my teeth into, I can't quite read it and predict what's going to happen necessarily. And with three nominees, I feel like I can kind of say who's going to be the one that's definitely not going. And then it's a toss up between the other two, because I can't read if they're faking me out or not.
Mm-hmm. So episode three, we come in, and I did like the visual here. This made me chuckle, of the people in the house just hanging out in the backyard, in the pool, and then it sort of pans back. Mm-hmm. And there's a huge crane with a cage of people starting to swerve over the backyard.
Yeah, I've seen that one other time before, and it was at a music festival in Dubai, and they called it the suspended bar, and you could pay to have four or five of your friends get put up in a literal, very similar cage up and just have your drinks and watch the concert from up there. It's just crazy. Because that's not something you're going to think is happening. So, because I was thinking, I'm like, do they not hear the crane come through? But then why would you assume that they're going to put a cage of four people above you? It was a fun visual. And I felt bad for the four people, to be honest, more than anything.
Yeah. So they get lowered over the backyard. They come down, and this is immediately going to turn into a task that they have to figure out. How long do we leave these people in the cage? You'll get $50 for every hour that they stay in the cage that you can use to buy food.
Yeah, my favorite part of this was Angela being sorry, I haven't had my tea yet, so you're good. You're going to be sitting in this cage for a little bit.
Yeah, I don't know if this was the editing, but it was very strange how these people were treated, where I feel like if this happened in a U.S. season, they would go to the cage, they'd immediately introduce themselves. They'd have a welcome, and then everybody would talk about okay, so you guys in the cage, how long do you guys feel comfortable staying in the cage? Obviously, we're not going to force you to stay in the cage against your will. What are you guys thinking? And the people in the cage would be we'll try to, last as long as we can, guys, because we're team players. And then it would be an endurance competition for the people in the cage. How long can they stay? It would not, even if it was ostensibly supposed to be the decision of the people outside the cage, it would be the decision of the people inside the cage from the get-go. But that is not how it seemingly played out here.
Not even a little bit. It very much was weird because it kind of felt like they were not treated as equals. It was like, listen, these peasants, we're going to walk away from them and we're going to discuss as our squad what we're doing. And it didn't feel like they got a chance to really introduce themselves and talk like regularly
until like 10 minutes later.
Yeah.
Or more.
Yeah, it was like, hello, well, why are you not being civil and talking to these people who now you know you have to basically imprison to get money? Like, I would want to befriend them immediately. I would want to be like, hey, listen, like, I'm so sorry this is how you're starting the game, but we're trying to make the money here. Like, obviously, if you're not into it, we'll scrap it. Because, like, there's a game being played here beyond your food budget. And that game is, how much do I want to piss off these people? So if I was one of the four, now there is no way. Like, obviously, there's a small chance that no matter what, they're going to nom other people. But why wouldn't you? It seems like from just a human standpoint, it seemed very, very weird. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so, they're debate how long do we make them stay in there? And then they pretty quickly decided, like, at least 4 hours. Hey, guys, sorry, you guys are going to be staying in there for a while. No consideration. No, like, are you guys okay? Like, how are you feeling? And then eventually, finally, they get around to introducing themselves. Of course, we saw that Sarah immediately, when she sees Hannah, is like, oh, she's a tryhard. That tryhard.
Yeah. I saw her in my group audition and she was doing too much. Didn't like that. And then when they introduced themselves, we find out that Hannah also plays footy. Mm-hmm. And then the Daniel Hannah thing was kind of starting.
Yes. And so Talia introduces herself. She says, I believe she starts it off. I know you might think I'm a beauty queen, but I'm actually not. Can you guess my profession?
Mm-hmm.
Which, like, oh, man. There's no worse way to, it's probably worse ways, but you're just making it all about yourself to be like, no, I'm so special. You're probably not even going to be able to guess how special I am.
Yeah.
And then it's obviously, she's trying to bait people into doing something that will, that she can be like, aha, you're wrong. You didn't think I was smart, or you didn't think I was this, or you didn't think I was that because you have bad perceptions of me. They're like a doctor, lawyer, what is it? And it feels like after a while, after many guesses, Hannah says, a stripper? Like, and she's like, oh, how dare you?
This was 1000% entrapment from Talia.
Yeah.
She straight up wanted that. She wanted to be called a stripper. You know what I mean? Like, she wanted, not necessarily a stripper, but like, she wanted the negative connotation with how she looks to be the answer that Hannah gives. And Hannah gave her that. And obviously it worked out. But I will say, one of the most self-serving ways to do something is be like, hey, so you might think I'm hot because I am, but I'm not just hot. Tell me what my profession is because I'm also smart. So not only am I beautiful, but also I am intelligent and you are stupid for just thinking I'm beautiful.
Yeah.
It's like very self-serving, like talk me up, but by me not having to say that I'm all those things.
Yeah. It's really, it's not a good look. And then she's going to use this idea of like, she called me a stripper, as like the reason why she hates Hannah, even though we all knew that she hated Hannah before that moment. And she was trying to, find a reason to dislike her, that weren't petty.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, Hannah and Daniel are like, there's sparks there. Sarah's already told Talia, I don't like Hannah. Now she has more reason to not like Hannah. And now Hannah has called her a stripper, which Talia did not like. So it pretty much Hannah hasn't put her feet on the ground yet. And already she's dead to rights with Talia.
Like, yeah, the feet are already in her mouth at this point.
Yeah. Oh, it was over. But yeah, the only time I've ever done something like that is when I ask people to tell me, guess how old I am. And they always guess older because of my beard. And I feel good about myself because I'm like, oh, I'm actually like 5 years younger, but thank you. Now I've like grown into my beard. So now they're like 35. I'm like 28.
Wait, when people ask you to guess something about themselves, the correct answer is, I can't guess. I don't know.
You have to. So the move is, I don't know. Like, I honestly can't tell. I'll just throw one out there, but then tell me. Okay. And then you just throw something out that is complimentary, you know? So if I did this to you, be like 24, I'd be like, no, what? No, you're ridiculous. I'm 28. And it's like, oh, okay. So then I don't feel like you made a big assumption about me and we're on level playing field.
Yeah. If they force you to guess an age, if they look old, guess younger than you would think. If they look young, guess older than you would think.
Exactly. Because you know that's what they're looking for. As a kid, you want it to be thought of as like, oh, you're 18. No, I'm 15. Wow. Okay. So yeah, that's definitely the move. Where, you know, write these down. These are good things to know for the future.
If they try to make you guess their profession, just don't do it. Don't do it at all.
No, because if you guess like a higher caliber occupation than what they have, then they might think, oh, that's like an insult. But then if you think lower than what they're like, you're not going to win. Just be like, I just say, I don't know. And then kind of force them to give you the answer.
Mm-hmm. So we also are introduced, of course, to Subong, who is going to be doing a one finger, chin-ups in the cage.
Like, again, being submerged in this cage allowed two people to get big targets on them. And that was Subong and Hannah, because Hannah kind of foot in the mouth, but also Sarah helped with that. Subong was just doing the most with these exercises, like literally flexing on them, literally. And, you know, it's crazy because I think, you know, like Subong just seems like a complete package after he does this to me, because he is an older gentleman who's now, we know, really jacked, well-spoken, fun to be around. So by the time it's whatever hour, 2, 3, 4, and he's coming out this cage, he's already someone that you should be looking at as a big target, because I watched him be in a cage and do chin-ups and pull-ups for absolutely no reason with his relative ease.
Well, and here's the thing. If Subong is part of the OG crew and he's one of the 12 that comes in first, I don't think he's being targeted because of his physical prowess. I think that people would love him.
Yeah, I think that after, and I think that's the thing. Socially, he'd be in a good spot. I think he would be good with a lot of people, and he wouldn't have the situation where he's going to be looked at as like a physical specimen, really. I think he would bond with Daniel, if anything, in that moment, because now they're the two bros, mm-hmm. or the two athletic bros, and they're, you know, swapping push-up tips with each other or whatever athletic folk.
Have you ever done a Spider-Man push-up?
Taryn, I haven't done a regular push-up. The last time I played a game of beer pong, it was losers have to do 10 push-ups, and I've never wanted to win more. I have never played as good as I have because I did not want to drop down and fail at doing push-ups and then get ridiculed. So I went clutch one and then left. I was like, I am out. I'm not playing.
I really liked this scene of Subong doing a bunch of different kinds of like push-ups, and he does like the crawl or whatever it was. And then like you see, I don't know, if you're not, if you haven't hung out with like bros before, like people that are really like, they take a lot of pride in their physical appearance and their physical fitness. When they see somebody else do something, they always feel like, oh, I can do that. Right. You know, like they feel like they need to do it. So then we see that happen with Daniel. I need to do this too, because I am just as good. He is not just as good.
No, definitely not. He fumbles. And I think that embarrassment kind of adds the fuel to the fire. I played a recreational soccer the last year, and the worst part of playing was the 10 minutes before kickoff, because everyone's just doing keepy ups and trying to do tricks, and now the other person wants the ball to do it, and I'm like, guys, can we just talk strategy, because our defense is horrible and we're gonna lose because you guys are having a contest right now, like, stop. So I 100% hear where you're coming from and co-sign everything you just said. I hate it.
Yeah. So then we get we see that Talia and Sarah are going to bond over their hatred of Hannah. And we're going to get the next nomination challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Which is going to be that they're going to be standing in pairs on little circular platforms. And again, you just introduced four new people into the house and the competition is going to be pairs. And not only pairs, but randomly drawn pairs, which means that pretty much all of these new players will be paired up with somebody not from the new crew, meaning, you know, very easy for them to throw the competition to make sure that that somebody from the new crew is not in power, if they want to. And even if they didn't want to do that, just in general, like the chances of one of these four winning, especially in pairs, not great.
No, it slims down their odds a lot.
Because even if they do win in a pair, they're now with another person who is an OG person, who can put up at least one of the new people to make it like, okay, we'll compromise. You put up two OG people, I'll put up one new person, and then the votes are there to evict the new person. So exactly. Like they were doomed.
No, without a doubt, they were doomed. And then someone like, you know, if I'm looking at these people and I'm like, okay, from the new batch, the one person that's an odds on has a chance is Subong. And then he draws Angela, who I wouldn't argue is going to be very good at a balance core necessary challenge. Mm-hmm. So he's doubly damned because I don't think he has a big challenge ahead of him to win. And then, you know, the unfortunate draw that Talia and Sarah, the two people who've bonded over a hatred of a new person, team up to are in the same grouping and then win is just, yeah, again, this was just an odd choice. I don't know if I would have preferred it to be like a schoolyard pick of one person gets drawn and then they pick and then it goes on or something like that. Or if I think especially this challenge would have been fine if like we're two more episodes in and everyone knows each other. And like we've passed the you're new here, because again, this is a very easy cop out move of just get rid of one of the new people.
Mm-hmm. And maybe I've been watching too much of the challenge, but to see Hannah, who obviously knew she was in a lot of danger and needed to win this, and is a very competitive person, be so like kind and reassuring to Kieran, who like, you know, totally screws it up for her, despite the fact that she's competitive and knew she needed to win. Another indication for the quality of her character so far.
Yeah, no, Hannah can stay. I'm okay with Hannah right now. I appreciate Hannah right now.
Yeah, so Talia and Sarah win, and they immediately know that they are nominating Hannah.
Yep.
And Subong, which, again, if your goal is to get Hannah out of the game, what are you doing nominating Subong? What are you thinking? I understand that these people are not programmed to think strategically. I get it. This is like the first time that they've done strategic gameplay in Big Brother Australia. But you know what? That is not an excuse, because in the very first head of household competition, very first head of household reign in the Big Brother US game in season two, Mike Boogie understood that you put up one person that you want to target and one person that you think the house will not vote out. Sure, it didn't work out for him, but he understood the concept of don't put up a major target next to the person you want to get out of the game, because then people will not vote out the person you want to get out of the game.
So, yeah, so we got Subong, Hannah, and Marissa get put on. And honestly, when you're looking at this, it's fascinating because they put up two threats, and I thought a layup in Marissa because she's not going anywhere. And then when Marissa ends up pushing them for an answer, gets told, well, you're really well liked. So now that's also, you know, somewhat of a threatening position to be in, but you literally put up people that you don't want. You know who you put up? You put up Hannah. And then if you don't want to piss anyone else off, put up Danny and Shane, who no one knows, you know, mm-hmm. like who haven't really been a spark in the game. But Subong, who's been hearing as athletic, Daniel specifically is talking about how athletic this guy is. You don't do that, because now you're giving people an option to pick between two threats, and they might not pick the one that you want out. So
yeah, it's just it's poor decision making here. And then then they're like, okay, the third person has to be Angela, Kieran, or Marissa. And it apparently can't be anybody else. And they have a hard time figuring out who. They clearly make the wrong choice, because Marissa gets pissed. And then we see that Marissa's going to go off and Sarah's going to cry. We get this sort of like whole thing where somebody gets told off. I think it was Zoe. It's a big mess. These two are not the most strategic.
Definitely not. And I think that their mentality was, let's pick someone who's going to be quiet, docile. They're not going to make any waves as the third. They'll understand that, hey, you're not the one going. And Marissa jumped out. Like, this was literally Marissa's like big reveal party. She went Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, because like it looked like she was going to go get Sarah to like scold her and like, I need to talk to you. I need to talk to you now. And then they get faces. I wanted to hug you.
Yeah.
And
like, no, that was a lie. She was not finding her to hug her. She just saw that everyone was crowding around her, comforting her. She was at this tiny little girl crying, mm-hmm. and she knew, oh, what I'm doing right now is not good. I was just going to hug you. And then she gets into berating her again.
Yeah. It's like, well, but why me? Why me? Why'd you put me? Why'd you pick me? And then had a lot of choice words to say at the end of the episode as well, when being asked by, so the host is Sophia.
Sophia. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Yeah. When Sophia was asking some questions, had some choice words there too. But yeah, Marissa, definitely not the calm aerobics instructor that I thought I was going to see.
Sorry. It's Sonia.
Sonia. My bad. Sonia. I'm sorry. Okay. I think she'll accept the apology. That's good. But yeah. So, yeah, Marissa, just the last person I would have expected to see like fire out of, and we got that somehow.
I mean, I'll say I didn't expect anything from her because I didn't really even know she existed until this moment.
Yeah, no, literally, she was. We were coming into this episode. She managed to take herself off the list that Matt, Xavier, Sophie are in. So that's at least one good thing for her. We'll see if she goes back under the radar next week.
Mm-hmm. Ultimately, I think we see that this is going to be pretty straightforward, that everybody's going to vote for Subong to go. He's too threatening, I guess, with his physicality, and that's gonna be how it goes. We do see that Sarah seems to regret the decision, that she feels like, I feel like maybe I judged her too fast, that she seems like a nice person, and she's literally like almost in tears talking to Talia during the like tribal council portion of the vote out, like, I think we made a mistake, and Talia's like, what? No. Why?
Yeah, Talia's not happy that she's kind of being told to change her mind on this now that she's had a heavy, strong opinion on Hannah. I think part of it has to do with the fact that I think Marissa kind of fixed the ship for Hannah with Sarah by, you know, jumping out as this super aggro, angry person after being nominated, whereas Hannah did kind of what you said with Kieran, didn't really get crazy about it. Kind of was like, okay, I see where they're like, I understand what they're doing. They're wrong, but I'm not going to be vocal about it. I'm not going to make that my focus.
And Marissa just straight up says they don't like her because she's pretty.
Yeah. To Hannah, like, she filled Hannah in on everything that she believes Sarah and Talia.
But then she also says it in tribal. I'm just going to call it tribal.
Honestly, that's the way
I don't know what else to call it.
Yeah, it plays out like a tribe. It's like a domestic tribal. It's at home, it's on couches. So that's, I feel like it's a tribal. That's fine.
Yeah. She says it in fright. They don't like her because she's pretty.
Mm-hmm. And then talks about how there's a person who's won, you know, some people are winning a lot here and like people need to look at them. And I'm like, you do realize there's only one person that's won more than one thing. So just say her name. You might as well.
Yes. But ultimately here that Subang is going to be voted out. And that is the end of our first week of Big Brother Australia. And I think at this time it should be pointed out that we have now lost three of, I think, four minorities in the cast.
Yeah. Let me just give a quick look at this photo here of all the cast. Angela is currently, by the looks of it, I would say the remaining person of color in this cast,
mm-hmm.
which is crazy.
Yeah. We talked about this in the premiere that, mm-hmm. Laura, she's threatening that, we need to give her, why? Cause she took a binder once, Alan, and then Subang, who's, doing Spider-Man pushups. Even just like the consideration for who else do we nominate? Well, obviously Angela. She should be an option. And then you got Kieran, the sort of nerdy outcast. We got Marissa, the older person. This is seemingly a very clicky, I think would be the kindest way to describe it, cast.
Yeah, I think that's like the very harmless way of calling this progress. Because like to me, obviously, there is a bit of implicit bias here, I think, with the way things went. And it's like implicit bias mixed with Vanessa's, like, I need a reason. And once that reason is there, like, it's out of my hands now. Like, this is my getaway. But with that being there, the Laura thing, Talia's whole thing was, well, she did not congratulate me for winning when I beat her. Or like, she looked mad, which like, if you're a competitive person, that's how the other person's going to react. Like, that's not a thing. That's a normal thing. But yeah, it's not great. I mean, and I want to say Alan destroyed Alan, but also Alan destroyed Alan once Alan was put on the block and did too much. So it's optically not a good look at all. It seems to me right now that Angela's fine. She should be okay. But we see this happen, too often, and it's unfortunate. And here's hoping that, in the world we're in, the place we're in, today, that things get better and people get more educated and more aware of the situations that exist.
Mm-hmm. It's just another part here that's just like, all right, Australia, you guys gotta figure this out. You gotta get this show on the right track here.
Yeah, please.
all right. Anything else, Puya?
I mean, no, I have been pleasantly surprised. We're in a place right now where we're talking about the whispers of, oh, Big Brother All-Stars is coming around, BB22. And like, we're getting that back, which is a lot of buzz, is a lot of fun. But even though that's been taking up a bunch of time and thought, Big Brother Australia delivered for me. And I think I'll continue to watch. With the speed I've been watching, it's been a struggle with me for Australian Survivor, where I'll be on top of it and then I'll fall off 1 week and then I'm way behind. I'm 5 hours behind. So we'll see how I do with that. But I would like to ask you, we're just shooting in the dark here because we have no idea where this is going to go. Who would be your winner pick after 1 week of watching?
Kieran.
Kieran? Yeah, I would say Ian. So I think
Kieran, Ian, or Angela, I think one of the three is winning the game, like hands down. I can't see anybody else winning.
No, I don't think anybody else has even a little bit of a exposure for me to feel any other way about it, especially because it's going to come down to a public vote. If Talia's at the end, do I think she's going to get the votes right now? No, unless something changes. I do think she's going to be part of the story, so that's good. Xavier, Matt, thank you for making an appearance on TV, but you're not winning. I look forward to us getting the Xavier reveal party, because I don't know if we will.
Yeah, I could see a small chance of Hannah. She's only had one episode and she has been a big presence on the episode, and I'm sure
that's
people
true.
People like the underdog, they like the person that's being picked on, and so I could see her without an outside chance. But is she gonna beat a Kieran, Ian, or Angela in the end? I don't know. I guess again, we don't know exactly how Angela is being perceived, but I have to imagine people love Angela. I mean, I like, will Angela beat Ian in the end? Probably not. But I think she could beat Kieran.
I could see it again. And it goes back to, like, you know, what's their arch? What's the storyline? How are they going to evolve? Are they changing within that house? Are they finding themselves within that house? Because I think a lot of that matters, especially in a format like this where the public decides. And things can change on a dime. We could walk into next week and Kieran does something to piss off the house or people outside the house. They're, like, we don't know where it's going to go because it's all been recorded and we are seeing, like, bits and pieces. But I think it's safe to bet, Taryn, that Kieran, Angela, and Ian are the top three here. And then Hannah has something going on there. If Talia ends up growing from this experience, she has something, but I don't think so, given that she was still angry. She was not happy that Sarah was trying to change her mind on Hannah. But yeah, it's been fun. It's been fun, and it's a fun hybrid experience for what it is.
Yeah, and I do want to say, like, I think that our perspective is very U.S.-centric.
Yeah.
And I've heard, at least from some Australians so far, and, you know, this has been part of the sort of, you know, Australian survivor narrative as well. Like, mateship is a big deal, and, you know, footy is a big deal. And, you know, a player like Daniel, who might not be super popular in the US, could be potentially more popular in Australia. Like, if Daniel made it to the end, maybe he is the kind of person that Australia would vote for. I don't know. We'll hopefully have some more Australian perspectives for next week's recap, at least in terms of information. But you know, I just want to throw that out there as a wild guess of, like, if I'm trying to, you know, take in what I'm getting in my Twitter mentions, maybe Daniel does have a chance.
Yeah, I could see that. And that intrigues me because, you know, once the numbers start dwindling, right now they're all trying to, like, survive, right? So once the numbers start dwindling and they realize it's a public vote, are they gonna go mateship, or does someone, you know, turn on the light bulb of, hey, Daniel was a footy player, like, he must be popular, he must have supporters, I need to get rid of him? Does that happen? Do we get that switch go on in the remaining players or not? But it's funny because this is kind of the first season of its kind, I think there's a lot of implications for future seasons and how people's mindsets are going to be in approaching Big Brother Australia as contestants moving forward. So I'm intrigued to see what these players do and what the public does with what they get.
Yeah. All right. So that's what we have for week one of Big Brother Australia. Certainly, you know, we have a lot of criticisms, and I don't want to apologize to anybody that's enjoying the show. Just because we are finding things that we don't love about it doesn't mean that you shouldn't love the show. If you are loving it, then I'm very happy that you're loving it. And if we get things wrong, and if, you know, our perspective is warped because we come from the U.S. perspective, I apologize for that as well. But that is, you know, where we're coming from with the criticisms. I've actually seen some people with criticisms from the other perspective, that they've ruined the game by introducing votes at all. I actually feel like, again, I think that's actually kind of coincides with what we're talking about, where it's like they're trying to be two things and not fully succeeding at either one. And so if they went full no social strategy, then I think it would be a stronger show from at least from the first week's perspective. Or if they went full social strategy, then I think it would also be a bit stronger. But you know, we'll see. When we'll check back in next week and see how it's going.
Sounds good. Yeah, I feel like, you know, we're blessed to get be in a world where we get to watch as many international iterations of the shows we do love. And we do come from, like, we came from the social strategy Big Brother community. Whereas I feel like if someone has been watching BBAU, BB UK originally, would come into watching US and be like, what is going on here? Right. So we come from a specific side of the coin. But I'm glad we see it. I mean, to end it, you know, in the words of the great poet Ron Swanson, never half-ass two things, whole-ass one thing. And I think that's the takeaway here.
Yeah. All right. Thank you guys for joining us this week. You can find me on Twitter at ArmstrongTaryn or on Twitch, twitch.tv/TarynArmstrong. Puya, where can people find you?
You can find me on all major platforms at Puyaism.
There you go. I will be back next week to talk about week two of Big Brother Australia. You can also find some blockumentary podcasts about Big Brother 4 in the U.S. Those will be dropping on Fridays, and also some general social strategy podcasts about Big Brother, Survivor, all those things that are dropping on Mondays. And we'll keep an ear out for some Big Brother 22 coverage as we get more information about this potential all-star season. So thank you guys again for joining us, and see you next time.